Good afternoon and welcome to Good News Updates with Living Compassion. I'm pleased to be joined this afternoon by Melissa, who, and also Pache, you might be hearing in the background, our German Shepherd, who is very excited when he hears the music of the radio show because he gets to join in with us. And today, Melissa and I are sitting on the back porch in our sound studio here because Melissa is joining us for the There Is Nothing Wrong With You retreat, not as a retreatant, but as someone who's very generously offering her time behind the scenes, doing countless dishes, chopping vegetables, and just generally keeping the place clean. And the reason that we wanted to have her on this evening was that she was also with us at the What You Practice retreat weeks ago and talked about at the end of the retreat her experience of being here at the monastery on retreat after many years of not being here. And we thought it would be a fun follow-up. Last week we talked with Sharon, who came to the monastery for the first time just a year ago after reading Sherry's books. And Melissa's been practicing for many, many years, but hadn't been to the monastery for quite some time. And so she agreed to join us tonight to talk about her experience of being back here and kind of the power of that and the place that has in her practice. So welcome, Melissa.
Thanks so much, Jen. It's really a pleasure to be here. So, I hadn't been back to the monastery for many years, and I had two experiences recently that really brought me back. One was the unexpected passing of my father, and there is nothing like that experience to really help one be aware that we all only are blessed with so much time, and there's only so much time. There's no time like the present, as they say.
You know, that's fascinating you say that, Melissa, because I know you weren't able to listen to the show last week because you were traveling, and Sharon said the exact same thing, that one of the pieces of what finally brought her to the monastery was the passing of her mother. That same realization that so when we see someone that we're so close to die, we get it, that even though actually this isn't going to go on and on, somehow it brings it much more immediately and sort of, I project, brings to the surface the things that are most important to us.
Absolutely, and that's a great segue to the second thing that brought me here was that I was in, I can't remember if it was another workshop or something else, and the question came up, what were some of the happiest moments of your life? And without even a hesitation, the answer just came roaring forward, my time at the monastery. And I really have had some peak experiences of just bliss and joy here, and I was kind of surprised to hear that answer because it had been so many years since I had been here. And so what came after that was kind of a, you know, gentle, loving, well, let's go.
Yeah, that's really neat. And one of the things that you were talking about in the retreat was how you, it's not that you haven't been practicing. You've been a really active part of the Sangha for many, many years and even came on retreat, I think it was in Connecticut with us recently. But there was something about physically being at the monastery that sounds like is a different thing for you.
It's really different. In fact, you know, after the three-hour drive here, the first thing you want to do, of course, is a bathroom break. And so one of the monks guided me, reminded me about changing shoes and guided me into that back hallway in the back of the dorm. And I just, the vision of that familiar place, it was just such a homecoming. The way that you feel when you've been a long time away from your beloved, it was just a really beautiful experience. And that continued throughout the week. And it was really wonderful to see the things that I loved that are still here, the fountain and all of the gorgeous landscaping that's in the courtyard, and then to also be delighted at the things that are new, like color. Suddenly, there's more shades than brown here. We now have yellow and orange and blue, and there are many things like that that are just really wonderful additions that have happened since I was here last.
That's one I love, the color reference. That's both in the garden, which I'm sure has flourished a ton since you've been here, due to some really generous folks in the Sangha who come locally and assist with that, and the beautiful flowers that now grow there. And for anyone who can ever get themselves to the monastery this time of year, I guess it's early May, the poppies are just breathtaking, the orange of those poppies.
Everywhere, and the abundance of them everywhere is just, it's such a beautiful, beautiful experience. And it, you know, each of those lovelies is like an invitation, like, be here, like, experience it. It's right here. It's just waiting for you. You just have to show up for it.
Yeah, they're not subtle, are they?
No.
They come right to you. And then the other piece of the color is the hermitage work that we've done, and just a really fun, each door is painted its own color. There are some yellows, there are some oranges, there are some reds, and then the signage that goes with each hermitage. And to me, it's just, it fits so perfectly with the monastery. There's this beauty of the nature and the surroundings, and as you say, most things are painted brown because that has them blend right in with their surroundings. And then there are these doors and these signs, which to me say, welcome. You know, welcome to your, for most people, welcome to your home for a week here. Just a way of really being an open invitation to people.
So true. And I, obviously, I had an amazing experience being here, so that when I left, I was supposed to, 2 days later, get on a plane, and I just couldn't do it. My heart just wasn't in it. I had received so much, and one of the things that was really great about the retreat was that I really got to focus on receiving and really noticing how much work was going into preparing and cleaning up each of those meals, and all of the awareness that went into tiny details like the color of a bath mat. And it was really an extraordinary experience of receiving, and I wanted to have the experience of being on the other side of that, so that I could give myself the gift of feeling like I got to do the giving. And that has been really, I've gotten so much. I've only been here a few days, and I've gotten so much already out of the working meditation. And one of the things that I love about this monastery is the humility here, so that the two people who were my teachers in the last retreat, who were just fountains of wisdom and compassion, one of them is washing the dishes right next to me, and one of them is chopping vegetables right next to me. And it's a wonderful thing.
That's one of my favorite things, too, is we're blessed with a teacher who models that for all of us, that it's all the same thing. It's all practice. Whether you're facilitating a retreat, or you're the participant in the retreat, or you're chopping the vegetables to serve the food to the people who are on retreat, or you're cleaning the outhouses for all of us who are going to need to use the facility. I mean, it's all the same thing. And just to realize that it's all practice, it's all service, you know, in an interesting kind of way. And I'm sure you're experiencing that with that being on both sides of it. We receive so much in every single piece of it, in every place, in every role.
Yeah, it's one of the things that I saw yesterday when the first night that I got here, I was asked to sweep the dining hall, and it's a sizable room. And I was doing that task by myself, and while I was doing it lovingly and willingly, it felt like a large task. And a couple nights later, we were mopping the dining room, but it was a we. There were three of us doing it, and I'm really learning about how out in the world, when I'm working with other people, it feels challenging because I'm having to navigate their egos. And here, where everybody is just working from the heart, actually working with other people is a joy because we're all available and we're all willing, and it actually feels better working with others. So it's exactly inverted. And, you know, I've had a lot of self-hate and a lot of beatings over the years about not being a people person. And I think what I'm seeing is that really I'm not an ego person. I'm very much a people person, but it has to be when it's coming from the heart.
It's great to know that everyone's doing their own practice. So even if I'm grumpy one day or someone else is grumpy, that's okay. It's all just part of the practice.
Yeah, that's another great thing that's come out of the working meditation is that even if I'm feeling a little bit unwilling, all I have to do is look over at the next person who's going to have to do it if I don't do it. And that's a great reminder that, you know what, I don't want that other person to have to do what I don't want to do, so I'm just going to go ahead and do it.
And then it kind of becomes fun, doesn't it?
Yeah, it really does.
Well, thank you so much, Melissa, for being with us. Anything else you wanted to add in before we...
I just encourage anyone who hasn't been on a retreat in a while not to pay any attention to what the name of the retreat is. It really doesn't matter. Just come. It's going to be different from when you experienced it, and it's such a gift to be here.
It doesn't matter if you've, quote, done it before because you haven't.
Yeah.
All right. Thanks so much, Melissa.
Thank you.
All right, Michael, we'll turn it over to you.
Okay, great. Thank you, Jen. Thank you, Melissa. Good afternoon, and welcome to Open Air with Sherry Huber. Good afternoon, Sherry.
Hi, Michael.
How are you?
Can you tell we're having fun at the monastery?
I can tell. I heard it in Jen's voice and Melissa's voice, definitely.
Uh-huh. It's a good time.
Yes.
Yeah. How are you?
I'm great. I'm great. Enjoying this lovely weather.
Oh, so blessed, as our friend Karen Drucker would say.
Yes, yes. And I have some announcements.
Right.
We have several There Is Nothing Wrong With You retreats, and a What You Practice Is What You Have retreat, open for registration on the schedule.
Ah.
Yes. And you will be at the Shambhala Mountain Center in Colorado for the weekend of July 13 through 15 for a workshop entitled Awareness, It's Not What You Think.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Mm.
Yeah, I caught myself thinking today, and that's not awareness.
Yes.
And folks can visit schedule.livingcompassion.org for more details.
You know, I really appreciated everything that Melissa said, and particularly that line about don't worry about what it's called, just come.
Yeah.
It'll be different. And, of course, we hope that, as people who do the practice, we can get it that each moment is new and all of that, but we can still be fooled into believing that it has to be a new or a certain experience for us to enjoy it. And so a couple of things that she said that I thought were critical pieces of awareness for all of us to remember. One is it doesn't matter what it's called. It's going to be a brand new experience. And two, you can always come and have the opposite experience of the coming on retreat. You can actually come and volunteer to provide that experience for other people. So for old timers who are thinking, oh, gosh, I've done all those retreats half a dozen times, you know, it's always great to come in there and get to chop some of those vegetables and wash some of those dishes. It's the exact same practice. In fact, Jen has said a couple of times this week, you know, I realize that there are two retreats going on. You know, there's the retreat that's going on in the hall, and there's the retreat that's going on in the kitchen because, you know, you guys are, it's all the same thing. We're practicing just as hard in the kitchen as folks are practicing in the meditation hall. So.
Yeah.
Good.
Yeah. Beautiful.
Mm-hmm.
Beautiful. And I'd like to remind our callers to focus on one topic, please, in about 5 minutes.
Hey, here we go, huh?
Here we go. First caller, you are now live on the air, and would you please introduce yourself?
Hi, it's Anna calling from Yorkshire in England.
Well, good middle of the night to you.
Yep, that's right, yeah. Although at the moment, I finished work quite late on a Tuesday. I finish at 9, and it was still quite light outside, so it's lovely. The nights are getting longer and longer.
Oh, don't you just love it and warmer it?
Oh, yeah.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. So I'm just ringing just to connect and just to let you all know what I've been up to.
Good.
I loved the last email class. It was completely fantastic. I was trying to work out whether it was the email class or whether it was just sort of all the work that I've been doing that's enabled me to really get the most out of it. I expect it's a bit of both.
I just want to stop for a second and underline that. That goes right along with what we were talking about earlier, doesn't it? Because, it was, I mean, I think it was a good email class.
It was.
But for somebody who's not doing the work, it would just be, you know, another long visit with the voices. But because you've been doing the work right along, you can see the changes in you reflected in the level of work that you're doing in the class. So it's
absolutely
wonderful. Yeah.
Yeah, completely. And when I first started out, I wouldn't say that I was the most aware and attentive person. So if even I can see the difference, then,
yeah.
You know.
Yeah, it gets undeniable, doesn't it?
Yeah. So it was so great. And I really feel that during that, I feel like at the moment, you know, like you have the phase where you're practicing, like your hair's on fire. So I feel like I've been doing it for about the last 18 months, but really all during that EMR class, and I'm rereading it and the responses. I've sort of got them, I've got that page up permanently on all my electronic devices.
Oh, that's a great tip.
I'm always copying bits to print out and recording bits because it really, really worked for me. And so during the email class and then since, just aspects of me have really been opening out and getting bigger and developing. And there's been two areas in particular, and what they are so when I first started out, there was lots and lots that I didn't understand, but I just thought, it will come. And so one of the things was it sounds really sort of simple and really basic, but I wasn't really quite getting it. And that was, you know, the idea of your heart opening. And now I understand.
Yes.
Oh, it's really clear. It's amazing.
Isn't it amazing? Because I think it was Suzuki Roshi who came up with that image of walking along in a mist. You know, and you've got your big coat on and your sweaters and your whatever it is. But if you walk long enough, that mist is going to penetrate right to the skin. And that's very much like what happens. So we often say to people, you know, you don't have to do anything. You don't worry about it. Just show up. Don't need to listen to the voices, assess how you're doing with meditation or whatever it is. Just show up. Sit down. Show up. Do the work. And as you're indicating, over time, you begin to realize how different you are, mostly because of the things that you remember going, what are they talking about? Suddenly, it's such a clear and obvious experience for you.
Yes.
Like magic. It really is magic.
Yeah. Because, I've heard everything that you said over the years about not struggling and not noodling it and everything, and just keep doing the work, and so that's what I've been doing. And the other area that links with sort of the heart and the heart opening is listening to your heart and doing what your heart tells you and all of that. And I was like, well, yeah, that's not happening right now, but I'm sure it will be one day and all of that. And so that's happening now. So I've got this sense of who I am, and that's in quotes.
Uh-huh.
Because I'm aware that could mean anything, but for the moment I'm getting it on that level, and that was to do with, you know, the jewel and the crusty layers,
mm-hmm.
And that was really helpful. So I could see it's all a load of armor that's covering sort of who you really are as you were younger, as a child. All of that bit all gets lost and everything, and I can see that it was there. So what my heart all what it was saying has always been there, and it's been there all along. It's just that it's been covered up.
Yes.
So that was just so great, and so, because I was like, well, I don't know what my heart's saying, and I don't know who I am, and I wasn't too upset about that. I kind of knew that I didn't really know who I was or what I wanted in life and all of that sort of thing, and I can hear it now, this sounds really really silly or but it's just really simple. It's just who you are.
Yes. Yes. Well,
have I just made sense there?
Yeah, that's
and you don't
problem.
Have to try. You don't have to impress anybody or I think that's one of the things that I was always sort of, oh, I got really impressed all the time, and you don't. You just be who you are. But yeah, but I'm having to have courage to be who I am.
Yes.
And it's having the mentor stand with me and hold my hand and saying, fine, you're great. You stand, I'm standing by you, Yeah.
Yeah. Yes. It's one of those, it's true of so many things, but we don't realize it. So one of my favorite examples is math for me. I'd be in a math class and people would be talking about something, and it's like, what are they? And then all of a sudden it would drop in and make such complete sense that there's that, well, how did I ever miss that?
Yeah.
And it's the same. There's we just use these words that really don't mean anything until you have the experience. And once you have the experience, you realize, well, those words they're perfectly describing it. I just couldn't recognize it until I got to that certain place.
Yeah.
Mhm. Hidden in plain sight.
Yeah. Sorry?
Hidden in plain sight.
In plain sight. Yeah.
Mhm.
And the final part of that is like to do with confidence, and so I'm confident if I'm with people that are like me. But when I'm sort of out with people that maybe don't agree with what I might say or do and things, then I don't feel confident. And I've realised that that's because I'm not sort of expressing sort of just who I am or naturally, just what occurs naturally. And if I can just do that, it's difficult, but I can see that that's where the confidence comes. If I can just stand by myself, enough to say, well, this is what I want to do, or this is what I think, or this is what is going to happen, and just know that the world's not going to end if I stand up for myself, and that's where the confidence comes from. It's amazing.
Yes, and we're taught to believe that standing up for ourselves, say, has to be belligerent or argumentative or in opposition. But we can stand up for ourselves in complete kindness, authenticity, sincerity. When the heart is speaking, then all we're doing is reporting what's going on for us authentically in our heart. And then people can respond however they respond, and it's okay.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, yeah. That's what I mean. It might be just things like I think that this was mentioned. So Poppy, my daughter, was home educated. I home educated her, and that was something that happened, and it was the right thing. And I still believe, and it completely was now. I just but if I'm with a bunch of people that disagree with that and think that it's a terrible thing that we did. It's just me being able to say, well, it's what happened, and it was the right thing at the time, and look, we're all okay, we're all still alive. It's just being able to say that sort of thing, so it's not at all being aggressive or anything like that.
Wow. It's great, isn't it?
Yeah, so I'm really happy. And so I've been being really brave and been doing stuff and expressing myself through my artwork more than ever. And one of the things I've started is an online journal. And I sort of did it online because it's putting it out there, so it's helping me to be brave and, you know, look, this is who I am and this is what I want to say. And it's all about awareness practice and things like that. And then other artwork as well. So I just need more time to get more done and then get
right.
it onto Sangha Market.
Right. And what you're doing is is all about taking care of the human being, the incarnation.
Yeah, I am.
And nobody has to. Yeah, I mean, people can like it, not like it, you know. It doesn't matter because you're learning to be there for yourself in all situations. So all of back to the, you know, the young parts of ourselves who are excited and enthusiastic and wanted to do stuff and participate and have fun and adventures. And they just, for so many people, just got squashed. And now it's giving them the chance to have the life that they always knew was possible for them.
Oh, yeah, it really is. Yeah. Woo.
Yeah, it's exciting.
Yeah, so, so thank you for everything.
You're welcome.
It's wonderful. And I feel that I'm at a stage now where I can give back as well and be passing it all on from a place of more clarity. So,
That's great.
Thank you.
Thank you for staying up so late to talk with us. And let's do it again before long, huh?
Yeah, for sure.
All right. Take care.
Okay.
Good night.
All right. So thank you, Sherry. Thank you, Michael. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Thanks for joining us, Anna. You're listening to Open Air with Sherry Huber. That was fun, Sherry.
Yes. And of course, so many people struggle with this. You know, I have a sense that this works, and I can't seem to stick with it. I can't seem to make myself do it. So it's true. I think that last email class on resistance was just a real powerhouse in terms of assisting people to stick with practice. And Anna is such a great example of, just staying with it, just year after year after year after year, whatever arises, and just continuing to do the practice. And then finally, you know, getting to a place where life is truly really, really good.
Yeah.
That's what's possible for all of us. When we just stick with it.
Yes. Yes. Very beautiful. Very beautiful. And we have another caller.
Perfect.
Next caller, you are now live on the air, and would you please introduce yourself?
Hi, Sherry. It's Jonathan from England. It's a UK call tonight, isn't it?
Yeah, well, we feel very blessed tonight with our English connection.
Yeah, it was really good to hear Anna, and I've been calling. I've been trying to get through, but I haven't got through. So I wanted to talk about recording and listening because I've been having quite a lot of success with it.
Good.
And
I love success stories.
But it's fascinating how it works. I'll give you an example. Like, I grew up with the teachings of the Catholic Church. So I have these recordings about leaving it behind. Do you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And I can't believe how quickly something that used to go round in my mind a lot about it has died down.
Yes.
I think I'm just surprised at how effective it's been because I mean, when I started, it's about 2 years since I first called you. When I started, I was like, I'd meditate and I'd drink alcohol. And I suppose my first sort of kind of realization was, you know, meditating with a hangover is really hard, you know.
Yeah. Anything with a hangover is really hard.
And then the next thing was like, you know, I cut that down. And then the next thing was like, why am I so anxious all the time? And then the next thing was the caffeine. And then I started to be able to sit still with myself, you know. But then it all really got kind of really dark, you know.
Yeah.
So I think the recording and listening has kind of helped me to stabilize through these processes of conditioning being very intense.
Yes. Yes.
You
know, Jonathan, I have a sense of how effective something is by the level of resistance that it encounters.
Right.
And the level of resistance to recording and listening, I mean, you'd think we were asking people to commit felonies. Right? And all it is recording, making recordings about what isn't true, and then making recordings about what is true, and changing the conversation in our heads from a world we don't want to live in to a world that we do want to live in. And it's life and death for people to get to the point of being able to realize how effective it is.
Yeah, it's interesting. I think what I've noticed so many things. Like I noticed, like I listened to one of the recordings the other day, and the person on the recording, obviously it's me, just sounded really depressed. And I thought, I've changed, you know, in a month. That's what I was recording like a month ago.
Yes.
And now it sounds like this guy is kind of down. And so I thought, well, scrap that. I'll do that over because I've changed. I don't,
may
you know?
I make a suggestion?
Yeah.
How about keeping that so that you stay in touch with that guy? So that you get to know him and recognize him and get him into a relationship with the mentor. Because if he is abandoned again, then the likelihood that he's going to stay in a depressed state increases, and the chances that you're going to get pulled into that also increase. So apparently the Buddha's way of talking about it was, when you're suffering, it's important to know that it's possible not to suffer. And when you're not suffering, it's important to remember that you can suffer. So we always want to keep an eye on both of those worlds.
That's interesting because I just saw that recording as something that had come out of conditioning and I hadn't realized. Yeah. Can you hear me?
No, you went away. I couldn't.
Oh, I'm sorry about that.
Yeah.
Oh, dear.
You said you thought it was coming out of conditioning, and that's the last I heard.
Yeah, so that's why I thought that's a recording that conditioning made for me, and I didn't notice at the time.
Yeah.
Sort of thing. I mean, I suppose there is a bit of anxiety about, like, am I doing this right? But it does seem to be helping, so.
Oh, immeasurably. Yeah. And for exactly these reasons. So we get to have a very disidentified view of the human being that we've been trained to call I. And, of course, one of the things that becomes obvious over a little time is how many folks call themselves I. You know, how many different places, say if you record and listen for a month, to have a sense of how many places you go in a month, you know, all the different viewpoints about life and the things you're interested in and what you want to do and how you feel and what you're thinking. And it's just it's the most amazing ability to view oneself from a disidentified place. And then with the mentor's help, we can begin to sort out, you know, what is true, what's not true, who needs assistance, who needs support, who needs reassurance, who needs to essentially not get any more airtime because, in fact, you realize it is karmic conditioning or self-hate talking. And so it's kind of a, you know, it's sort of a fast track to awareness. You know, you'd have to do an awful lot of work to see, it, say, if you were doing therapy or I don't know if you were on retreat because that's pretty much a fast track too. But if you were doing some sort of process in an attempt to observe yourself, it would take you a long time to see as much as you would see in 1 month of recording and listening.
Well, I hope that's what's happening. I mean, I suppose to contrast it with therapy, in therapy, I understood what happened to me, but it didn't change me. And that was the paradox of therapy for me.
Yeah.
Whereas I think with this, I can notice, you know, I suppose the first thing to do is actually notice that I've dropped into like a bad mood, really.
Yes.
And play something back. And I, you know, half an hour later, I can't remember that bad mood. I'm back on track and
yes.
I'm enjoying my life again.
Yes, yes, yes. And so, you know, if you drop into a bad mood and you realize it's a familiar place and now you realize that it's really just a voice trying to talk you into a story so that you will give it energy, right? Then what you can do when that starts up is just to realize, I don't want to go there. I don't want to waste a half hour of my life on this. I want to turn my attention to, and you put your attention on what you actually choose for your life, and boom, there you are. Because it really is true that the life experience we have is a direct result of what our attention is on. I can't have my attention on a story of, oh God, ain't it awful for me, I hate them and they hate me, and ever hope to have a happy life. Those two experiences are never going to coexist. So, you know, if I want to have a happy life, then I need to keep my attention on a happy life.
Yeah, and I suppose the other thing I noticed with it, I agree with all of that. The other thing I noticed with it is that I feel like I'm going to other people less for these kind of, I mean, I suppose from therapy, I felt like I was taught to see it as like an unconscious drive to get other people to give you the love that you need.
Sure.
And I think I'm sort of becoming aware of these drives now, and I'm less kind of reactive in like, well, I need to go and see that person. Maybe I can get what I need from them.
Right, right.
Maybe I can get it like from myself now, you know.
That's right. And here's the, so, you know, sometimes people get a little panicky at that point, you know, so what does that mean? I'm just going to become a recluse? And no, because it, the fact that I don't need other people doesn't mean I don't want other people. So then I can, as a whole person, enjoy people from that perspective. And I think ultimately that's what, you know, we all want is not to have needy, dependent relationships, but to have whole, healthy relationships.
I think the interesting thing that I notice in my life at the moment is I think most people do seem to want not to have needy, messy relationships with
yeah.
me, and I'm like,
well, it's true.
I don't need these right now.
It's true, Jonathan, and the pool does get smaller. Okay, but it's another one of those magic places in awareness practice, and that is that as you change, the people you're drawn to and who are drawn to you will also change, and you'll begin
right.
to realize that, oh, there are all kinds of people out there who are not interested in messy relationships, but I never saw them because the only people I saw were the messy relationship people.
Okay. Well, it's good enough for me
good.
Today.
Good. All right. Well, stay in touch. Let me know. Okay.
I sent you something. Did you get a book about sleep? I sent you a present because I thought it would be right up your street.
Oh,
maybe,
I haven't.
Maybe you
but,
never got it.
Well,
it's called Siesta and the Midnight Sun, and I sent it to that P.O. box at the monastery.
Oh, okay.
Ages ago. Yeah, and I forgot to tell you. I forgot to say who it was from because it was sent from like Amazon in America. But anyway, it doesn't matter.
Oh, okay. Well,
I'll let you get on with another call.
The monks are all listening, so they're on alert now to see if it's sitting in a stack somewhere and nobody knew which way to direct it. So that's perfect.
Okay.
All right. Thank you. Right.
Speak to you soon. Have a good day. All right.
Bye
bye.
Good night.
Bye bye.
Thanks for joining us, Jonathan. You're listening to Open Air with Sherry Huber. Sherry, I noticed you breaking up just a little bit there talking with Jonathan. I could hear most of it. Just wanted to report
on
that.
I there's not much I can do. I'm on a landline.
Okay, perfect. You sound great now.
Oh,
so
good.
Great. Let's break for our sponsors, and then we'll be right back.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you. Next caller, you are now live on the air, and would you please introduce yourself?
Hi, this is Greta from Washington State.
Hi, Sherry. Hi, Michael. This is David calling from Hawaii.
This is Janet calling from New Hampshire.
Hi, this is Catherine from St. Louis.
Rebecca from Austin, Texas.
Hi, Sherry. Hi, Michael. It's Anna here from Yorkshire in England.
It's Ramita calling from South Carolina.
Hi, Sherry. Hi, Michael. This is Todd calling from Canada.
2012 marks 10 years that Sherry and Michael have been doing Open Air. They have fielded thousands of your calls and archived hundreds of shows. In this year of deepening practice, we invite you to give a donation to support Open Air. Go to the Living Compassion website, click on the Donations tab, and make a donation of any size to the Zen Center, writing Open Air in the notes field. Step forward to be part of expanding the transformation. Lend your support today.
We're very lucky people.
We are very lucky people.
See you next week.
See you next week.
Good night.
Good night.
Hi, this is Scott from Porch Dog Software. Today we're talking with Lanny, one of Porch Dog's favorite clients. Lanny, what do you think Open Air listeners might want to know about working with Porch Dog?
Well, Scott, I think they might want to know that you write all kinds of software for Macs and iPhones and iPads, and for all types of companies, big ones and small ones like mine. And you do your work with a lot of enthusiasm.
Yeah. You know, one of the things we love about Open Air is the energy and enthusiasm in every show. We try and get lit up about everything we do here at Porch Dog Software, too.
Everything?
Yep. Especially the things we don't like.
Sweet.
Check us out at www.porchdogsoft.com. We look forward to hearing from you soon.
You are the light of the world. You are the light of the world.
This beautiful song by Trish Bruxford Colligan invites us to celebrate the unique light each of us brings to the world. Simply Celebrate wants to support you in living into that light, no matter where you are on the path, but especially when it's a little hard to see in the dark. With great gratitude to Sherry Huber and this amazing Sangha, Simply Celebrate uses the practice as a foundation for everything we do. We offer coaching, books, and self-mentoring programs to help you find more joy, color, spontaneity, and connection, moment to moment. Visit simplycelebrate.net and turn ordinary days into an extraordinary life.
Welcome back to Open Air. Sherry, we have another caller.
Good.
Next caller, you are now live on the air, and would you please introduce yourself?
Hi, this is Sandy from Florida.
Hello, Sandy.
Hi.
I'm so excited. I call every week, and I got through. Yay!
All right, yay! What's going on?
I want to tell you how everything you just said to the first two callers is true for me, too. All of the workshops, I've been to the monastery, and I've done the workshops, and I do the calls, and I do the email classes, and it feels like that last email class with resistance just totally broke things wide open for me. I have had an ongoing, I think I've heard you say that life keeps giving us situations so that over and over and over so that we can finally get them.
Yeah.
And I'm 63 years old, and I've had this thing coming and coming and coming and coming, and I feel like I may have gotten it, and I recorded over it, and I've been listening, and I found a mentor inside of me, and I've been talking to her, and she was very inspired by Alex because she's super Sandy, and she swoops in and says the nicest thing to this poor little six-year-old girl who needs someone to tell her it's going to be okay, and kind of like you were just saying with the last caller is that I finally found that I don't have to look outside of myself to get my needs met.
Isn't that just the best?
It's huge.
It's huge. Yes, it is.
It's enormous.
Yeah.
And once I found that, everything else opened up.
Yes. And you still enjoy relationships with other people. And, in fact, sometimes I think we start to enjoy relationships with other people.
You know, I think I'm not a needy friend anymore.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, well, I'm pretty new at this, so I don't know if I can say any more. But I feel like that whole needy part, like I hope my friend responds like this, or I'll say this, and then maybe they'll say this. I don't have to do that anymore, because what I want them to say, my mentor can say to that little girl who wants somebody to reassure her everything's going to be okay. And I can do that.
Yeah.
So I feel like I'm coming to my friendships, long-standing friendships and new friendships, on equal footing now.
And I bet you can, because you're not coming at a relationship for what you can get. So, you know, my teacher's thing was we grow up spiritually when we stop being concerned about what we can get and start being concerned about what we can give. So now you know, you know the importance of loving unconditionally, and because you have that, because you know that experience in yourself and have that for yourself, then without making any effort at all, that's what you start offering your friends.
And what an amazing that shift is. I love what your teacher said to you. You know, finding out what I can give instead of what I can get.
Yeah.
Because I think I have, because I've been trying to satisfy that horrible need inside of me. I mean, I've looked to alcohol. I've looked to cigarettes. I've looked to food. I've looked to other people. I've been in therapy. I've been in 12-step groups. And all the while, I was there.
Yes.
Who knew?
That, yes, that's what Anna was saying, right? That
exactly.
all along, so we have a book title, you know, That What You're Seeking Is Causing You to Seek. And
yep.
And so all along, everything you wanted, needed, hoped for, wished for was right there living you and waiting to be noticed.
Yeah, without a doubt. And waiting so patiently for sometimes, and then so not patiently. There was so much urgency around some circumstances that, you know, I felt like I was going to burst out of myself, you know, in all of the urgency, and I keep remember times when you said urgency is not your friend. And so I instituted that with the last incident that broke through for me. And it was a Friday that I was feeling all this amazing urgency. And so I just was, I didn't know where to go or what to do. I was frantic. And the urgency was frenzy more than just urgent. And so I just felt so overwhelmed. I said, I'm going to take a vacation. I'll deal with this on Sunday.
So
and what
you
I
just
found,
took a vacation from the urgency.
I did.
I love it.
And, yeah, and well, and that, and because of that, a vacation from the situation too.
Yeah.
And so, what I think that my I'm taking a vacation actually turned out to be was going back to center.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because
exactly.
By the time Sunday came, I didn't feel any urgency. My insides weren't broiling and rolling all over, and I was able to actually say, wow, this really isn't about that. This is really about this. Awesome.
Yes. Yeah, that's powerful.
It was powerful, and I thank you again for all the tools that you've given it. I thought I would never record and listen. I swear to God, I took the record and listen email class, and I probably did it once. I couldn't do it. I was so resistant. But then when I got the resistance class, I was like, okay.
I see how this works.
And yeah, and so now I feel like I've got half a chance so that, you know, when, not if, but when this comes at me again, I'm ready.
Yeah. Yeah, I'd say you've got way more than half a chance.
Oh, it's
yeah.
So awesome.
It really
I can't thank you enough for everything you and the monks do, and Michael, for you being there every single week, even though I don't get to chat every week, I'm there, and it's just amazing, and I thank you from the bottom of my heart.
Yeah, yeah, thank you. Yeah, it you know, we say this, and it's one of those, it really is true. It takes all of us.
Yeah.
It takes all of us.
And I just have one more question, and it's a real easy one. I wanted to crochet slippers,
uh-huh.
And I sent my email in saying, I'll crochet slippers, but didn't hear anything back.
Uh-oh. Okay. Well, the person in charge just heard that.
Okay,
so I
great.
I have a feeling you'll hear something before long.
Great. I'll be the crocheting knitting lady in Florida where we certainly don't need those slippers, but
that's
I'm
right.
happy
You're
to
happy
do it.
To- Happy to send them to California.
That's right. Thank you again. Have a wonderful day.
You too. Good night.
Good night.
Thanks for joining us, Sandy. You're listening to Open Air with Sherry Huber. Wow, this is fabulous, Sherry.
I think practice is working, huh?
Practice is working. Yes, indeed. And we have another caller.
Good.
Next caller. You are now live on the air. Would you please introduce yourself?
Hi, it's Patty.
Hey, Patty. How are you?
Hey, Sherry. I'm good. How are you?
Excellent. What's going on?
Well, I'm calling to talk about separation.
Uh-huh.
And this process that I've been seeing a lot with just with feeling separate.
Mm-hmm.
Conditioning really does not want me to talk about this.
It's trying to muzzle you right in the middle of this conversation.
Yeah, I've got all sorts of sensations right now. So basically, the content right now is practice and sangha, and the story, the campaign that it's got going is that that I'm not really part of the sangha, or that I don't really belong to any one sangha, and this is coming up because I practice with another sangha. And it's very similar to what we do in this practice, but it's not a Living Compassion group. And it's, this is not new. This has been, you know, going on for a while. But suddenly, it seems like a really big issue. And it's convincing me that, you know, I can't talk about this with you, that I can't talk about it with anybody in the Sangha, that it's a betrayal. I mean,
You've been unfaithful, Patty.
Exactly. I know it's not true. But there's somebody in me that's believing it.
Uh-huh. Well, now, let me ask you this. Do you think there's really somebody in you who's believing it, or there is karmic conditioning telling this story in the hope that you'll believe it and you will ditch us, it sounds like. It sounds like you've gone off with somebody new. So if that's the campaign, does that sound familiar?
It is, but there's another part of it, which is that the other Sangha that I practice with isn't quite right either.
Yes. Well, that was my point. So
it's kind of a
divide and conquer. So it's, first of all, you know, whichever way it can get you to go, but decide one of us, right? So you're going to go with this or you're going to go with that, you know, and there's a lot of suffering, potential for suffering there. And then once that happens, you see, so say it talks you into not practicing with us anymore because this other Sangha is closer to where you live. It just makes more sense. It's really similar. I mean, really mocks Nyx. And so, you know, that just makes more sense. Then here's what I can promise you. As soon as you do that, it starts the campaign to get rid of them.
Mm-hmm.
You have a sense of that, right?
Oh, yeah, it's already started the campaign.
Yeah, it's working on both of them simultaneously right now.
Yeah, it's like, oh, you know, neither one of these relationships is right for you.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Yeah, you should look around for somebody new. So it seems to me that actually, even though it doesn't feel like it when it's inside your head, as soon as you put it out, I hope, it gets pretty clear and straightforward. And that is that it's nonsense, right? Right?
Yeah.
I mean, when you hear it, when you say it that way, you know, so you got your basic partner there, and then you got your boyfriend.
Mm-hmm.
And then the voice starts in with neither of these guys is really right for you. You know, at a certain point, you've got to go, now, wait a minute. Really? So now, of course, the work is to end it,
mm-hmm.
right? To end the conversation. And for mm-hmm. me, the easiest way to end it is I'm going to let life decide. I don't need to have a conversation about this. You know, first of all, it's just as easy to say, isn't this great? I am rich with sanghas. I practice with two sanghas. Aren't I lucky? If I want to travel, I have one I can travel to. If I want to stay close to home, I have one close to home. How good is that?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I'm also trying to see how all of everything is sangha. Everyone, you know, whether they're practicing or not, is sangha.
Everyone. Sangha, everything is the Buddha.
But so what I've been noticing is, you know, as I turn my attention to that, the campaign to separate me gets even stronger.
Exactly so.
You know?
And the good news is, you know what's going on. It's a campaign to separate you. Now, you've probably heard me encourage people to find a sangha and stick with it. And that's exactly for the reason that you're laying out, because that's what it does. It's like if you decide you want to get married, and you know that. You know you want to get married. You're just a marrying kind of gal. That's really what you want. And you look around and you find this guy who is just great. You really like him. He's honorable, he's fun, he meets all of your standards. Is he perfect? No. But then, you know, a quick look, you notice that you're not either. But this is a, you know, this is a fine human being. And you decide that this is the person that you're going to marry. Now, does that mean the voices in your head are going to say, good decision, we're going to leave you alone about that one? No. The campaign is going to start to ruin that relationship because that's what egocentric karmic conditioning self-hate does. And so what you do, wise person, is say, no, I'm not going to do that. I'm in a perfectly good place. I'm exactly where I've decided I want to be. I'm going to stick right here until life makes a different choice. Now that, and it, now anybody listening to this, I didn't say he's a drunken, abusing so-and-so, right? And you should stay in that relationship because you could, that's not what I said. I said this is a fine, beautiful human being. You're probably not going to find anybody better. Okay, that's the place that we stay because if we don't make a commitment to something, then what's happening to you just spins out of control.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I feel like I have made a commitment, and life is taking me, is sort of taking me in other directions as well. It's not like I went out looking for another Sangha. It just sort of happened.
That's right.
And, you know, and I've also heard you encourage people to sit with, you know, group, you know, find a sitting group, even if it's not, if they're not doing, you know, our kind of sitting, you know, to just find people that you can practice with. Like, I've heard you encourage people to do that.
Right.
That's
right. And so
it's just, yeah.
And so if you decide that's what you want to do, then it's the same process of finding the one. Right? So you've decided that what really works best for you is to be in relationship with two people.
Mm-hmm.
Now you're going to work out the logistics of that.
Mm-hmm.
But in any case, you're not going to indulge the conversation with karmic conditioning that says, okay, this, and that means that, and now you're this, and so because of that, that, and that's what you're not going to do.
Yeah, that's where the suffering is.
That's exactly right. It's not in it's not in being involved with two sanghas. There's no suffering in that. Yeah. It's that you don't belong to either one, and you're the wrong person, and you should do something else, and that's what this means. That's where the suffering always is.
And I'm just, you know, really glad that I called today because there's another process that's going on right now, which is it's a familiar process of there's something that I can't talk about.
Yes.
You know, like if there's something that I have to keep a secret because so and so is not going to approve, you know, of this. I fall for that one. I think I talked to you a year ago about this with my parents. Like, I couldn't tell them that I was going on a month-long retreat because I was afraid of how they would react.
That's right.
It's the same thing.
Yeah, it's the same thing. So what you learn, and this is where recording and listening practice is so helpful, right? What you learn is, and this the recording would go something like this. Anytime I hear that there's something I can't talk about, I need to start talking about that and only that until I'm not getting that message anymore. Right?
Yeah.
Yeah. So you just run straight at it.
Yeah. Okay.
Speaking of which, I'm not going to say any more about this, but have you done the What You Practice retreat?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Then you we'll say no more, but you know what I mean. You have to run straight at it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay. One quick question about recording and listening.
Uh-huh.
The way that you often lay it out is, you know, that you talk about let the person who's having a trouble talk, and then have the mentor respond.
Yes.
Sort of like a two-chair exercise.
Yes.
But But when I record, it often comes out more like, it's not like two separate entities talking to each other. It's like, it's just like, I just start talking. And usually I come around to some sort of mentoring or some sort of clarity with it.
Yes.
But I just, you know, and I felt like, okay, you know, it's working. It, you know, I don't need to worry about the form that it's taking. But I wanted to just put it out there because it was something that was needling me, and I was like, I should just put it out there because
yes.
otherwise conditioning is going to keep torturing me about how I'm doing it wrong.
That's right, which is the theme, right? I think we're seeing a pattern here. So, yes, what I would suggest is happening is that you are talking yourself into center.
Right.
So you start out with a person with an issue, and as that person is able to talk through it and finds acceptance and understanding and sympathy and compassion and blah, 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 and that person is basically fading away as you are moving more into the centered mentoring place.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And that might be a really interesting thing to see if you can sense the feel of that transition as you move from being mostly focused on or in touch with the one who has the issue and how focusing your attention, because that's what's going on, and listening, being present to, and feeling empathy or sympathy for, that you can feel yourself transitioning into center.
Right, okay. Yeah, I will watch that.
Very
okay.
good.
Oh, thank you, Sherry.
Well, I'm glad we had this chance to have this little conversation.
Me too. I'm really glad, and I'm going to keep talking about stuff that I'm
there
not allowed to talk about.
There you go. No secret. All right. Thanks,
right.
Patty.
Good
thank
night. You.
Bye-bye.
Okay, bye-bye.
Thanks for joining us, Patty. You're listening to Open Air with Sherry Huber. Sherry, we have about 3 minutes to the hour. Would you like to talk with another caller?
Could do. The only problem with that, Michael, I think I'm going to vote no because
okay.
Because we don't have the ability to get that person back. And
yes.
It always leaves that just, you know, we've got 2 minutes into whatever it is and then
yes.
they're just hanging out there and I can't find them again. And
yes.
So I think we will just leave on that encouragement to talk about what the voices say we cannot talk about.
Great.
And we'll all look for what that is and start blowing the whistle on conditioning.
Excellent.
All right. Thank you,
sir.
Okay. Talk to you next week. Bye.
Bye.